As you know, we've been going through various studies about pre-flood archaeology, and this one is going to be on the longevity of the patriarchs. In Genesis chapter 5, Genesis chapter 10 and 11, it talks about the patriarchs living hundreds of years. And many people wonder if this is true or not. And the thing about this type of study is that we know that it is correct that people did live hundreds of years. The problem is we don't know the methodology or the way it occurred or why it occurred, because God doesn't tell us that. He leaves that to our interpretation. So this study is going to contain lots of speculation because there's no way we can know exactly what happened. On the other hand, we're going to cover some issues because I think sometimes people are intimidated by science and the fact that sometimes science and the Bible don't agree. And what I want to show you in this Bible study is that God often uses natural and physical things to accomplish his will. So just bear in mind that there's going to be lots of speculation. I've never heard a Bible study on this subject. Lots of times you can go online and look at other Bible studies that people have given and get some ideas. But nobody's given a Bible study in the churches of God on this subject. I think I'm probably the only one that's ever delved into the subject. So a lot of it is going to be speculation. Most of it biblically based. But some is going to be just inferences, which is a fancy way of saying we're guessing. But still, it makes for some very exciting and interesting reading. And it's a very interesting study. And there's a lot of information that you probably don't think is in there that we're going to kind of glean out and look at. So with that as a disclaimer, we'll go ahead and get into the study. Mr. Monsivais, could you get those lights there, please? You are going to be taking notes, hopefully. Is that enough light for y'all? Give your eyes time to adjust. All right, if you need more light, another one, turn one on, Mr. Monsivais. How's that? Okay, just go ahead and leave that one on. Thank you, sir. We're going to go ahead then and get into our next study on pre-flood archaeology, and that's the longevity of the patriarchs. It's a very, very interesting subject. It's a subject that's often not covered, but it is part of the Bible, and it's very important that we understand what the longevity aspect teaches us as it concerns the patriarchs. Now, it's very important, this subject, because it validates a Genesis account. The Genesis account says in many, many places that people lived for 600, 700, 800, 936, 969 years. And if that is not true, and if that's legends and myths, and if that's Babylonian, Sumerian counting, and they're counting moons and months instead of years, and various other theories that some people have, then we cannot believe in the rest of the Bible because the book of Genesis is not true. If what the book of Genesis says is not true, and Jesus often referred to the Old Testament, how can we believe the rest of the Bible? So understanding that the patriarchs did indeed live for centuries validates the Genesis account. It also has implications for the millennial world that is coming, because the pre-flood world, part of it was an Edenic world. God created Eden, Garden of Eden. It was a paradise. He put people in it, and he expected them to live out and choose a way of life. And in the Edenic state, people lived for a long time. Adam lived to be 936 years. Noah lived to be 150 years. This was, and I know that this was after the, Eden had been closed off and its way was guarded by cherubim. But the original intention was for there to be an Eden. And part of the Edenic aspect was people had a long time to live. Which brings up an interesting question, which we'll cover in another study. How long are people going to live in the millennium? Are they going to live 30 or 40 years and then die of cancer, or 60 years and die of heart disease? It's another interesting subject. So it has implications for the millennial world that's coming. It shows how God uses the material world to accomplish his purpose. God uses atoms. He uses the wind. He uses storms. He uses chemical reactions. He uses all kinds of things to validate his word and to accomplish his purpose. And the subject of longevity, we're going to get into all kinds of interesting things about that. Now, let's review very quickly some of the things we studied in the past Bible studies. Real quickly, we're going to summarize some of these. We are old earth creationists. We believe that the Earth is very, very old, so therefore we understand that the light from the Andromeda Galaxy takes 2 million years to get here. We understand that. We don't have to finagle the figures and do all kinds of things that some of the young Earth creationists are doing. We understand that the Earth is old. And we also understand that mankind is young at the same time the Earth is old. So mankind was created about 6,000 years ago. Look at the, how do we know that? Just genealogies. Who begat who, how long the ages were between the births and all of that. So we look at the generational chapters and we can figure out how long ago Adam was created, more or less, within probably a few decades. So mankind is young and the Earth is old. Genesis 1 is a recreation account. We read in Genesis 1, chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, how the earth was without form and void, how it had become wasted and confused, and that it had been it was recreated in 7 days. So there was a past history of the earth, and then the earth was recreated in seven literal days as a habitation for man. So we are recreationists, old earthers. We understand there's a gap between Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. You know, the earth became without form and void and all of that. We covered this in past studies. I'm not going to dwell on it. The Bible is a catastrophic book. Look at the trumpet blast and the mountains hitting the earth and the star with a fiery tail hitting the earth and the meteor showers and all of these things. Astronomical catastrophes that occur in the book of Revelation. We understand that fossils and large strata beds are indications of past water catastrophes. There's two of them mentioned, the flood in Noah and the flood in Genesis chapter 1. And strata is indications that fossils or animals have been buried, and strata can be laid down very quickly, and it can be eroded very quickly. Mount St. Helens deposited several dozens of feet of strata in a few days. And if we hadn't seen it being developed, we'd have given it ages of several hundred thousands of years or millions of years. Continued here, the earth has been through many past catastrophes. We looked at those as extinction events. The pre-Adamic flood and Noah's flood are just two that we know about. There may have been more. We don't know. The pre-Adamic world of dinosaurs came to an end with a catastrophe that left the earth covered in water. We read about that in the first few verses of Genesis chapter 1. The fossil record of early man supports a Genesis record. In other words, the last study we had was about fossil men, and I showed you how the fossil record, properly interpreted, supports what the book of Genesis says. And one of the things was that the skull shapes and the morphology of some of the fossils indicates that they had lived a long time, which goes hand in hand with the study we're having now. What happens, and one other thing, little side note here, humans were not the only organisms that lived to be hundreds of years old. What would happen to a turtle that lived to be 400 years old? What would happen to a crocodile that lived to be 500 years old? What would happen is they'd get 40 feet long, and you'd be digging them up in South America and in the Sahara Desert, as they're doing now. So longevity has implications not only for man, but for the fossil record. A scientist, like all people, are biased. You and I are extremely biased. We're very biased. But you know what? So is everyone else, including scientists. And when scientists say we're not biased, you know, we're just looking at the facts like Sergeant Friday, they're not. They have a certain viewpoint with which they examine everything. And so do we. So you have to understand that scientists, like all people, are biased. Major points about the longevity of the patriarchs. Christ is a creator of the physical world. He's the one that created the world to allow men to live for hundreds of years. The world that the men lived in and the women lived in before the flood that allowed them to live hundreds of years was a world created and designed by God. So he intended for men to live 100 years. It wasn't, you know, God didn't say, oh, look at that. People are sure living a long time. That was his intention, for them to live a long time. Biblical longevity is indicated by the properly interpreted fossil record of early man. Just covered that. Some of the crania and the skulls and the limbs indicate hundreds of years of age. We cannot, and this is very, very important, we cannot discover all the physical processes that led to biblical longevity. There's hundreds of things that could have caused men to live longer. And there's hundreds of things that could have caused men and women not to live so long. But we don't know all of those processes. All right? Therefore, this is going to be a speculative sermon, our Bible study. So I'm telling you ahead of time that we're going to be doing some guessing quite a bit of it, but most of it biblically based. It's a broad and complex subject, the longevity of the patriarchs. Some of the things that are involved are cellular metabolics. You ever seen someone that can eat everything and not gain weight? And someone else looks at a cabbage and puts on weight? That's your metabolism. Now, metabolism is affected by exercise and all that, but most of your metabolism is genetic. All right? There were cellular things that were going on. For example, diabetes. Some people can eat the same food, and some people are diabetic, and some are not. The reason is diabetics is caused by your hormones. So if your hormones are set for a different set point, then some people will get diabetic, some will diabetes, and some will not. So we're going to look at cellular metabolics and how cells work. Genetics. We all know people who, in their family, everyone lives to be 100 years old or 90 years old. And others where, man, his dad died at 50 from a heart attack. His mom died at 45 from a heart attack. It doesn't look good for him. That's genetics. We all know of families where all the women at a certain age all have some kind of disease. That's genetics. So genetics is very, very important. Some of the longevity aspect, in my opinion, most of it was genetically driven. In other words, men before the flood had a gene that said you're going to live a long time. Mutations. We plink out pieces of the chromosome. We violate the spacing of the DNA and the strands. We have mutations. We delete parts of it. We have mutations. Mutations cause all kinds of problems. 99.999 with another 10 nines added to it of all mutations are bad. Like only one out of a billion is any good. So we did not get here because of mutations. Evolution is not correct. We are devolving because our genetic material is degenerating because of mutations. A diet. Some people can increase their lifespan 20 years by what they eat. And some can decrease it by 20 years by what they eat. Environment, very, very important. Environment is extremely important. Earth's magnetic field. The Earth has a magnetic field, and this magnetic field keeps cosmic rays from coming into the surface of the Earth. Cosmic rays, as we learned in our Bible study on carbon-14, are simply high-speed particles that will go through your body, and as they punch holes in your body, they affect all kinds of systems, depending on where they hit you, how big the cosmic ray is, and how often it hits you. So Earth's magnetic field is very important. The mechanics of the Noachian flood. Did the Noachian flood crack open the Earth's crust, and therefore was there a lot of magma that came out of the ground, which brought a lot of radioactive material to the surface of the Earth, and now men were living in a world that was more radioactive? Things like that. Did the mechanics of the Noachian flood cause the atmosphere to become different later, because we have ozone at the upper atmosphere that's very good. Ozone at the lower atmosphere is very bad. It's carcinogen. In the pre-flood world, it was all at the top. Now it's all at the bottom. What caused that? The mechanics of the flood, wind systems and all of that. Stellar phenomenon. We have a couple of stars go nova within a few light years of us. We are toast. We do not exist anymore. The only reason that we're alive and we know that supernovas exist is because the supernovas are millions and sometimes thousands of light years away from us. So distance protects us. You ever been in an office where the doctor says, I'm going to x-ray you, x-ray your mom, and say, could you please step over there? And you go, what's the difference between over there and over here? You're farther away from the x-ray source. So when the star goes nova, the farther away you are from it, the less problems you have. So some stars going nova close to us, some stars going nova far away from us, it's going to affect how much the cosmic rays hit us. And there's many, many others. There's probably thousands of factors. We don't know all of them. I'm just going to cover a few of them here. And the reason I want to do this, is so you can have a little bit of faith. And when the Bible says men live for, you know, so many hundreds of years, you can say, yeah, I can see how that would be possible. We cannot recreate what happened. We can only kind of look at it. It's like the Bible says, we're looking through a mirror dimly. We just see a little bit. That's what we're going to do in this Bible study. Longevity of the patriarchs, some considerations. We cannot duplicate the factors that cause longevity. You know, if, for example, The magnetic field was stronger in the past of the Earth, and that caused the cosmic rays not to hit the Earth, which caused us not to have so many cancers, which increased our lifespan. We can't go up and fix the magnetic fields. We can't do that. All we can do is talk about them. We cannot duplicate the things, probably thousands of them, and the biofeedback loop systems that were in effect. We can't duplicate them. The study is trying to show some of the factors that cause biblical longevity. How can it be explained? The study cannot create what God did. Therefore, this is only a model based on speculation, biblically based. All right? Two basic areas that we're going to examine in this study. There's hundreds of them. We're going to look at two of them. One is environmental. That's like the diet of the patriarchs, the makeup of the atmosphere, supernovas, stellar phenomenon, things that occur with the weather. And then we're going to look at human physiology, which is your genetics, the cellular dynamics, hormones, and human maturation, things like that, things inside of your body. What happened is two things happened. The environment changed at the flood, and the human body's response to that changed. And that led to people only living for 80 years and 70 years instead of the 800 they used to before. The longevity of early man, Genesis chapter 5, and we're not going to look at that yet, but we're going to look at Genesis chapter 5, the longevity before the flood, and then we're going to look at Genesis chapter 11, the longevity after the flood. So let's go ahead and turn in our Bibles, and let's look at Genesis chapter 5. Genesis chapter 5, it begins with Adam. Adam had a son named Abel. Cain killed him. Cain was banished. He had another son named Seth. So we have Adam and his third son, Seth. And in Genesis chapter 5, it talks about Adam. And let me get there. Genesis chapter 5. This is the book of the genealogies of Adam. Male and female, he created them. Verse 3, Adam lived 130 years. He begat a son, called him Seth. After Seth was born, we have 800 more years. So 800 and 130 is 930 years. So Adam lives 930 years. You can look there at Enos. Enos lived 905 years. I'm not going to look at each one of those, but Jared lived 962 years. The only one that didn't live near 1,000 years was Enoch. And we had a study about what happened to Enoch, and Enoch was actually murdered. So he didn't live out his expected lifespan. So Enoch is not included in the, although he did live 365 years. Now, when you look at this book, what happens is these are the years that you see. In Genesis chapter 5, Adam lived 936, Noah lived 950, Lamech was the youngest living one besides Enoch, who lived 365, Lamech lived 777, and the rest of them, almost all of them, lived into the 900s. All of them, as a matter of fact, lived into the 900s. Enoch died young. So what we find is before the flood in Genesis chapter 5, people were living almost 1,000 years. That's what the biblical record says. Now, let's look at Genesis chapter 11. Now, one more thing. The average lifespan before the flood was 912 years when you leave out Enoch, because Enoch died unexpectedly. So most of the people were living into the 900s. All right? Now let's look at the next chapter, Genesis 11. Genesis 11 occurs after the flood. And in Genesis 11, we have Noah. And Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. We're going to look at the line of Shem. And in verse 10, it says in verse 11, chapter 11, verse 10, these are the generations of Shem. This is the book of the genealogies of Shem. This is what it's talking about. Shem was 100 years old, and he begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. So he lived 100 years before the flood. And then 2 years after the flood, he came through the flood on the ark. He gave birth to Arphaxad. And then in verse 11, he lived 500 more years. All right, so what happened is Shem lived to be 602 or 600 years old, depending on how you interpret it. And you can read about the other ones. Eber in verse 16, 430 years. Then afterwards, 430 years. So you add them together, and Eber lived 464 years. So here we have Genesis chapter 11. And, you know, Shem, 600 years, Arphaxad. Shem was the only one that was born before the flood. All the others were born after the flood. Arphaxad being 2 years after the flood. And then from Arphaxad came Shelah, so forth and so on. We go far enough, and you notice how the years start to decline. Longevity. We get to King David, and it's like 70 years. He lives like 72, 75 years old. And so after the flood, the average lifespan was 271 years. Okay, so before the flood, it's more than 900. After the flood, it's less than 300. Interestingly, Josephus. Now, I don't expect you to read that, but I do want you to know that this is in Josephus. And what Josephus says is the following. Now, when Noah had lived 350 years after the flood, and that all that time happily, he died, having lived the number of 950 years. So it agrees with the biblical record. But let no one, upon comparing the lives of the ancients with our lives, and with the few years which we now live, think that what we have said of them is false, or make the shortness of our lives at present an argument, that neither did they attain so long a duration of life, for those, this is the reasons he believes they lived longer, for those ancients were beloved of God, they were closer to the creation, lately made by God himself, and because their food was fitter for the prolongation of life, might well have lived so great a number of years. So they were closer to the creation, they ate better, and God loved them. That's what he says, they lived so long. Notice this. Now I have for witnesses to what I have said, all these that are written antiquities, both among the Greeks and the barbarians. Brethren, we have lost a lot of information. There were histories written by Egyptians that are thousands of years old that we have lost. We don't have them anymore. They've been destroyed or faded off into history. Notice all of the historians here. Now, I have for witnesses to what I have said, all those that have written antiquities, both among the Greeks and the barbarians, for even Manetho, who wrote the Egyptian history, and Berossus, who collected the Chaldean monuments, and Mochus, and Hesitias, and besides these, Herennomius, the Egyptian, and those who composed the Phoenician histories, agree to what I here say. Hesodius also, and Heticus, Hellenicus, and Acusilius, and besides these, Ephorus and Nicholas relate that the ancients lived 1,000 years. Notice he says they lived 1,000 years. 936, 969, almost shy of 1,000 years. And then he has this little disclaimer. But as to these matters, let everyone look upon them as he thinks fit. Antiquities, book 1, chapter 33, section 9. So this is written by Josephus. So Josephus says that there were historians that will verify that the patriarchs lived this amount of time. Let's look at the changes in lifespan. Genesis 5, the average lifespan is 912 years. Noah, Adam, all these other patriarchs lived before the flood. Genesis 11, average lifespan is 271 years. Question, what happened between Genesis chapter 5 and Genesis chapter 11 to decrease longevity? Something did. Let me give you a hint. The flood. The flood did. Now notice what it says in Genesis chapter 6, 13 and 17. Let's go there. It's written up there, but let's look at it in your Bible. And you may want to keep your place, hand and mark in some of these places we go to. Genesis chapter 6, verse 13. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them. I will destroy them, the people that lived on the earth, with what else? With the earth. The earth was destroyed. The earth before the flood is not the same earth that we have after the flood. Why? The first earth was destroyed. If you keep reading in verse 17, and behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is on the earth shall die. So it's a time of great destruction. So what happened between those two, Genesis chapter 5 and Genesis chapter 11, those two cohorts of longevity? We had the flood. Flood, no pun intended, was a watershed event. Look at 2 Peter chapter 3. Keep your place here in Genesis. 2 Peter chapter 3. We're going to look at what the New Testament says about the flood. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 4. And saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. For this they willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, the flood, whereby the world that then was being overflown with water perished. So Peter says that the old world of Adam perished. It perished how? By a flood. And you remember we read about the flood in Genesis chapter 1, first few verses? Earth has been destroyed before. So the earth perished. So what happened between Genesis chapter 5 and Genesis chapter 11 is there was a flood. And what did the flood do? The flood filled up the lakes a little bit more with extra water and kind of made the some of the paths on the earth muddy. And maybe if you're a skeptic of the Bible, it was only a local event somewhere in Europe. No, the flood completely wrecked the earth, brethren. It destroyed the earth. And the only way we know that is because the Bible tells us. And we can look at the fossil record, and we can look at the strata on the earth. The subject of the next Bible study. Reduction in longevity was part of the curse. Part of the curse. Let's go to Genesis chapter 2. Told you to keep your place in Genesis. We're going to be going back to Genesis. So keep a little marker there. Genesis chapter 2. Here is God talking to Adam before Eve was born. Or excuse me, created. And in Genesis chapter 2 verse 17 it says, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. Some people say you can't trust the Bible because the Bible says that the day that Adam ate of that fruit and Eve ate of that fruit, they would die. And yet Adam lived to be 936 years old. He didn't die on that day. How do you explain it? Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 8, a little bit further than we were before. 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 8. An interesting concept here. Do you remember how Josephus said that the patriarchs lived almost 1,000 years? Genesis, or 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. But beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing. The context is the flood. That one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. All right, now let's look at Psalms 90. Psalms 90. Psalms 90, and we're going to look at Psalms 90, and we're going to look at verse 4. For 1,000 years is in thy sight For as 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in the night. So 1,000 years to God is like a day. All right. Now, well, let's go back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 17. Depending on what translation you're using, there's probably a little marginal rendering by the verse 17. Mine says, dying thou shalt die. Not that you're going to die that day, but dying you shall die. Some of the translations, better ones, have translated it like this. Genesis chapter 2, verse 17. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, in dying you shall die. Now let me ask you a question. God says that a day is like 1,000 years, right? Did any of the patriarchs that we looked at that were alive before the flood, did any of them live more than 1,000 years? No. So they all died within that day, is what I'm getting at. So Genesis chapter 2, verse 17. says that in that day, which is equal to 1,000 years, they would die. So the fact that the patriarchs didn't live past 1,000 years fulfills this scripture, and it was true. Adam lived and died when he was 936 years old, which is before the day for him was over. Nobody lived to the 1,000-year time period. I think the longest living person was Methuselah at 969. Now, here's a longevity of the patriarchs chart that I've made up. Here's 1,000 years. Here's 0 years. Here's a lifespan from 0 to 1,000. Here's the generations mentioned in the Bible. Here's Adam. Adam lives to be 930 years. Lamech lives to be 777 years. He's the youngest living of all the old patriarchs except for Enoch, who died early. All of the patriarchs before the flood, notice how their lifespan is all gathered up right around here. If we got rid of Lamech, and Lamech was a pretty rough character, he may have died early from violence, some speculation. We all are up here in the 900s. Now, right here we have a line. That line is the flood. After the flood, people began to die. Shem, who was born before the flood, he lives to be right there, about 600 years old. And then it starts dropping off until we get over here to Eli and King David. So as time went on after the flood, people started dying off. And the more time went on, the shorter lifespan they had. Once again, the flood is being the defining moment. This is the same chart. This chart here before the flood and after the flood. I've taken this next chart, and we're concentrating on just what's after the flood. What's after the flood. Here is Shem. Shem lives to be about 600 years old. Peleg lives to be about 240-something years old, so forth and so on. Okay? Now, this is a classic decay curve. It's a classic decay curve. Now, check this out. Here are some decay curves. This is a decay curve of the phosphorescence of rocks. You know, rocks glow. How long does the light last after you put it into the dark? It begins to decay. It gets dimmer and dimmer as time goes on. This is a radioactive decay of an element that they put into your bloodstream to track how your blood circulates so they can follow it along with some little Geiger counter. And this radioactive material they put in has a half-life. After a few hours, it's not radioactive anymore. It starts to break down. This is the decay curve of that radioactive isotope. This is the decay curve that I have of the patriarchs. And if we move this over a little, it would look a lot like these guys up here. So what I'm trying to get you to see is, in nature, all things decay at a certain rate. You can take people who have mutations, they have cancer, and there's 100 of them alive, and you can plot over time, and it'll be a decay curve. You can take people who smoke. How long does it take for them to die of lung cancer? And you can plot the decay curve. You can take people that, are exposed to radon gas in their basements. How long it takes for them to die. So what's happening here, in nature, all things decay at a certain rate. For example, if a container of living organisms is exposed to a radioactive substance, they will die off in what is called a natural decay rate or curve. If their lifespans are plotted on a graph, the graph on the left is shown. This is the same type of curve that is produced by the death rate of organisms exposed to lethal doses of gas or other toxins. So everything that's, you have a cohort of them and they're dying, you're going to get a decay rate that looks like this. This is very interesting. What are the implications of the fact that the patriarchs, after the flood, were dying off in a decay curve way? What is that telling us? The information for the ages. Where did we get the ages? From God. He's the one that told us how long people lived, and he dictated that to somebody, probably Adam, and Adam wrote it down. The information for the ages of the patriarchs provides ages that closely match a natural exponential decay curve equation. So in other words, if these were just made up dates, they wouldn't have matched the chart. Everybody with me? They weren't made up, in other words. It is highly unlikely that people living at this time knew the mathematics of the decay curve. It wasn't discovered till back in the 1800s. It's very unlikely that the ages were fabricated, since they closely match what's on the decay curve. The ages of death after the flood show that the post-Genesis flood world was being affected by some natural factors that were causing the declining lifespan. So the fact that the patriarchs were dying, and we can plot their ages of death in the decay curve, shows us that they were dying of something natural. In other words, there was something in the environment that was killing them. What was it? The diet, cosmic rays, the dirty water. I mean, we don't know. But we do know, by plotting the ages, that they were not fabricated, and that it's telling us that something environmental or natural was killing off the patriarchs. Let's look at Joktan and Peleg. I told you to keep your place here in Genesis. Go to Genesis chapter 10. Genesis chapter 10. In Genesis chapter 11, we have, in verse 10, we have Peleg, verse 18, excuse me, Genesis chapter 11, verse 18. Peleg begets Reu, but notice in Genesis chapter 10, verse 25, more details. And unto Eber, this is where we get Hebrew from, and unto Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. So we have Peleg and Joktan that were born. Some say because they're mentioned, you know, in the same verse, that they were actually twins. So Joktan and Peleg could have been twins, but if not, they were brothers separated by at least a few years. What's so interesting about these two biblical patriarchs? Peleg, he lived about 101 years after the flood. How do we know that? We compare who was born when and how long they lived. Pelagic means water or sea level. You've heard of pelagic fishes or pelagic birds? They live, you know, pelagic bird is a gull. So pelagic means water. Or division using water. So what happened is after the flood, the earth was denuded. There was no trees. Rock is very reflective, so there was no vegetation for many months. So the sunlight striking the earth would get reflected back up into outer space. The earth cooled down by a few degrees, not many. That caused the ice ages. That caused the ice in the North Pole and the South Pole. Stored up a lot of water. Water froze. What happened is the earth is warming up. This is 100 years after the flood. Peleg is born. The earth is warming up. The snow is melting. The sea levels are rising. A lot of people read about Peleg and they think, oh, we got the plate tectonics, you know, and the plates were moving and the earth was being divided by plate tectonics. No, what was happening is the earth was warming up, the ice was melting, the sea levels were rising, and the strait between Siberia and Alaska, the Bering Land Strait, was going to get flooded. You can't cross there now. It's only under about 30 or 40 feet of water, but you can't cross there. If the water had risen another 25, 45 feet, the Isthmus of Panama would have been covered. And so Central America and South America would have been isolated by a large body of water. So what happened is God says, I want all of y'all to move and start colonizing the earth. And they said, no, we're going to stick around here with Nimrod, story of Nimrod. And God said, okay, if you don't move, you're not going to be able to colonize the world. So he confounded their languages. So they had to move. Peleg's division was being caused by the water rising after the flood. So this is about 100 years after the flood. His brother's name, possibly twin, born within a few years or maybe at the same time, was Joktan. Joktan, the brother Peleg, was born. His name means to reduce or to make small. After Joktan's birth, lifespans declined 50%. Let me show you. Here's that chart I had, the big chart that I had. Joktan, brother of Peleg, he's right about there. Before Joktan, post-flood average lifespans were about 480 years. Look at these lifespans up here. Look at how it drops with Peleg right here. After Joktan's average lifespan was 240 years. What does Joktan mean? To make small. So we got 400 years over here for the average, and we got about 240 years over here for the average. We got actually about 480 at about 242. So it drops about 50%. And so God names things what they are. Here's a reduction, and there was a 50% decline in longevity. So Joktan is hinting at us that the longevity was going to be reduced even more. Environmental factors affecting longevity. These are some of the things that can affect longevity. There was a supernova remnant shell. Star explodes. It explodes close to us, maybe several hundred light years away. These particles are traveling at a high rate of speed. Think of BBs. And these BBs, which are microscopic, which are protons and neutrons, are entering the atmosphere, going near the speed of light, and they come all the way down to the Earth, and whatever's living on the Earth is going to get bombarded by these particles. Can you imagine what these particles are doing to your cells? Now, if they hit your cells, they're going to age you. But if they hit, like, your sperm or your egg cells that you're carrying in your body, your children are going to have mutations because it's affecting the DNA and that. And every child after that will have the mutation. So we have supernova remnant shell that could have been affecting the Earth. A background stellar radiation could have increased. Magnetic fields and stellar radiation could have changed. Background earthly radiation. In other words, right now there's radiation coming from the ground. There's radiation coming from this gypsum. There's radiation coming from this wood. And if I put a Geiger counter here, it would measure so much radiation. Possibly before the flood, it was smaller. After the flood, it's now what we have, which is causing us background problems. Beneficial doses of radiation. Let me explain what I mean by that. Your body produces antibodies when it's exposed to a toxin. You get the measles from your brother. You don't get the measles anymore because your body produces antitoxins that don't let you get measles anymore. You know, lots of times moms will say, well, the brother's got the measles, I'm going to put all the kids in there at one time. They all get the measles and they never get them again because their body's producing an immunity to the measles. A little bit of something is what's called the harmonious effect. Hormesius effect, excuse me. And what it means is a little bit will make you stronger. Well, there's some scientists that believe that a little bit of radiation, of low-dose radiation, will make your body immune to larger doses of it later on. So there's a possibility that before the flood, there was beneficial doses of radiation, and that allowed those people that lived before the flood not to be affected by the radiation that would come later. Another subject, and we'll look at that in a little bit. Composition of the ancient atmosphere might have had CO, carbon dioxide, and ozone. Ozone is a big atom, and it hits the cosmic rays hit the ozone and break it up into smaller pieces, sort of like a steel plate in front of a bullet that breaks it up. And if you're behind it, you're not going to get hurt. Increased atmospheric pressure and oxygen concentration. All of these will affect longevity. These are all environment outside of your body. Some of the things in your body, physiological factors that affect longevity, reduced metabolism and caloric intake. Some people's metabolism can cause them to live a longer time. Reactive oxygen species. Your oxygen in nature has a spot where two electrons can bind to it. Chemistry lesson here. And you know, you've heard of eat your vegetables and eat your fruits because they're antioxidants. Well, they provide a molecule that attaches to that oxygen, and that oxygen no longer can oxidize things, which means kill them. So when you eat your vegetables and your fruits, you take that and you fill that spot up in the oxygen, and now the oxygen won't hurt you when you ingest it or breathe it. So there's some people that believe that there was more factors that caused these to be blocked in the past. Changes in the cell's telomere. Cancer cells live forever. That's why they look at a cancer cell, look how big it is, and say, oh, we're going to give you 3 months to live, or we're going to give you 5 years to live, because they know how long it's going to take to get big. Cancer cells do not ever die. There are cells in your body, and they're programmed for death. Some cells will reproduce 20 times. Some cells will reproduce 100 times. And then after that, they quit reproducing. Or they reproduce very badly, which causes us to get wrinkles, gray hair, and all those other things that comes with aging. That's why older people have the problems they do, because their cells are reaching the end of their reproductive cycle. Amoebas split and make another amoeba. And that amoeba splits and make another amoeba. And so the amoebas we have are all caused by the original amoebas that were created at the time of the recreation account. They don't age. Humans, their cells age, and it's tied in to the telomere. And there's some people say that if we could change this, we could get our cells to live longer, which means we wouldn't age at 80, we would age at 800. Genetic changes in the body's use of hormones. You know, hormones can, though your body's reaction and use of hormones can change depending on your health and various other things. What if there was a genetic change to how your hormones reacted? What if your hormones processed the sugar correctly and you didn't get diabetes, or you didn't get overweight, or you didn't get whatever problem you're having now? You didn't get the plaque building up on your heart and get cardiovascular disease. Changes to how the body metabolizes foods and nutrients. The food before the flood could have been a different kind of food or better. Could have been filled with vitamins that we don't have now. You know, you can increase your lifespan 20 years probably by eating right, exercising, and doing all these things. What's far-fetched about increasing it to 800 if the whole environment was changed? Let me get to this next one here this way, because it will not. But there's lots of factors that could have caused some of these things we're looking at. Now, here is an interesting chart. The other chart showed you how long they lived and who they were. This one shows you how they lived in relation to each other. For example, this is Noah. This is the year of the flood right here. So right here we have the flood. So some people were born way many years after the flood. Some people were born a few years after the flood. Noah and Shem came through the flood. They were on the other side of the flood. Noah lives 350 years after the flood. Shem lives 500 years after the flood, for a total of 60 years. Arphaxad was born the second year after the flood, lived 438, for a total of 440 years. Now, this is a very interesting chart because it shows us several things. Notice something. Here we have Shem. Look at Shem. Shem lives 502 years after the flood. Look at Abraham. Shem outlives Abraham. You tend to think like, oh, Abraham and all those people, they didn't know anything about the flood. Abraham could have talked to Shem about what was going on during the flood. And look at this. Noah, right here, knew Abraham. He could have known Abraham. Look at that. He lived right in the middle of Abraham's life. He died, so he could have known Abraham right over here. So what I want you to see is this is very important because it shows us how they were born in relation to each other. But it shows something else that's very interesting. And let's go ahead and go to the next slide, and we'll talk about that. Noah lives 950 years total. 600 years before the flood and 350 years after the flood. How long was Noah supposed to live and not go past it? 1,000 years. He lives 950 years. All right. Shem lived 600 years, 500 years of them after the flood. He lived 100 years before the flood. Did you notice that Shem didn't live out his 1,000 years, almost? He didn't live to be 930 or 940. He lived only 600. So something happened between Noah and Shem that caused Noah to be able to live almost 1,000 years, but his son couldn't. Everybody see that? That's very interesting when you look at that from a longevity point of view. Arphaxad, Salah, and Eber, right here. The first three generations after the flood all had the same lifespan, approximately 438, 433, 464. They were all born about the same time, and they all died about the same time. 100 years after the flood, Joktan, the brother of Peleg, here's Peleg, was born. Notice right here how the lifespans are very large, and after Peleg and Joktan, they're very small. Couple of interesting things. These three generations here died within a few decades of each other. These three generations here died within a few decades of each other. These three generations here died within a few decades of each other. All of them died within about 190 years of each other. What is that telling us? Let's look at some things. This is the fourth and the fifth, sixth generation. I covered that, 235 years. They lived about 140, 100, 200, 175. The most interesting longevity feature is that all the patriarchs died with a 191-year time period, and they all died clustered around a few decades, which is telling us what? There was a population bottleneck because of the flood. There was not that many people to marry. You had to marry your cousins and all of that. Because there was Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their children, and they all married, intermarried each other. A little tidbit here, a little trivia. Noah lived to be 950 years. Only three of his sons were on the ark. What do you think happened to the others? Did Noah only have three children in 950 years? What do you think happened to his other children? Some things we don't consider. The earth was destroyed by the flood, which would indicate environmental rearrangements. So this right here is telling us. Now here's the interesting thing. Noah lives out to almost 1,000 years. Shem, who lives part of the way in the pre-flood world, lives 600. He doesn't get close to 1,000 years. So there's something environmental causing the people to not live out their allotted almost 1,000-year day. What it was, we don't know. But we know from the decay curve that something natural was killing them. So there's some guessing here, but it's sort of educated. Why did lifespans decline? Speculation. The earth changed, and the human's body's response to these changes caused a decline in longevity. These bodily changes included genetics and physiology. Here we have a DNA strand. The pre-flood world was different from this present world. So the main thing that you need to understand is that the world after the flood is different than the world before the flood. Let me ask you a question. Is the millennial world that's coming going to be different than the world we're in today? Yep. Was the pre-flood world different than the world we're in now? Yeah. Was the pre-Adamic world with the dinosaurs different than the one that Adam was in? Yep. So we get this concept of, well, we're talking about different worlds and different, you know, ways of living. The Bible is full of those. You got one world that was a pre-Adamic. You had the Adamic world. You had which was the pre-flood world. Then you have our world, the post-flood world. Then you have the millennial world. I left out one. What's the last one coming? The new heavens and the new earth. So there's all kinds of worlds that are coming, and we're living in one of them. And when the worlds change, the environment changes. Let's look at a couple of concepts. Supernova explosions. A Titanic explosion of a dying star. As a star explodes, it expels all of its stellar matter into space. We are alive, brethren, because we are separated in distance from the nearest exploding star. You know, we look up in the sky and we go like, you know, the ancients did, a few of them. And you look up and you go, oh, look at that, there's a bright star. Nova means new. Nova means new star. Hey, the star just appeared out of nowhere. Because it expanded 1,000 or 1,000,000 times. Because the shell, luminous, is blown away and the core is blown away. All of that matter is scattered through space. If we're next to it, it's like having someone in a room and they have a machine gun and they're just going like this everywhere. If you're next to them, you're in trouble. If you're 3 miles away, you're probably okay. I used to use that analogy. But that's what it is to be, that's an analogy about an exploding star. You don't want to be next to it. So lots of times scientists complain about how far it is to the nearest star. If we were as close as they wanted us to be, so we could, you know, star travel in a few weeks, none of us would be alive. Because there's a few supernovas in each galaxy every couple of weeks. Which would have meant that if we were close together, life would have been sterilized off of all the planets. produces an expanding shockwave of stellar material, sweeps up other material along its path. Shockwave is known as a SNR, supernova remnant shell. Here's a picture of one of them. This is SNR 0519-690. They've given them dates. Located 150,000 light years from Earth. If this was 150 light years from Earth, we wouldn't be here talking about it, because we'd all be dead. Southern constellation of Dorado, the dolphin fish. Here's a supernova explosion. This is an artistic rendering used by NASA. But this is, these planets here are getting ready to be irradiated, and they're going to no longer support life if they had any to begin with. Here's one down over here. Supernovas produce cosmic rays. Now, let me tell you a little bit about cosmic rays. Cosmic rays are the atoms stripped of the electrons. A hydrogen has one proton, and that's it. A helium has two protons and two neutrons. A nitrogen has 14 protons and 14 nitrogens. So 14 neutrons. So 14 and 14 for the nitrogen is 28 particles. A proton has one. So nitrogen is 28 times as big as a hydrogen ion, or a cosmic ray made up of a hydrogen ion. We have iron. Iron is like 55, which means there's 110 or 20. So a proton and an iron cosmic ray, the iron cosmic ray is 110 times bigger than the proton. So when it talks about heavy cosmic rays, you're talking about cosmic rays that are made up of bigger particles. That's all it means. Would you rather get hit by one baseball this big going 100 miles an hour, or 300 of them going 100 miles an hour? One of these hits you in the head, we see it all the time on baseball, you probably survive. 300 of them hit you, they're going to be burying you. So supernovas produce different kinds of cosmic rays. Cosmic rays, when they hit your body, mess up with your metabolism of your body. They mess up your genetics, and they mess up your sperm and egg cells if you're going to have children later. So the cosmic ray might pass through you and not affect you, but it's affecting your sex cells, and those sex cells are used later on when you marry and have children, and they're passed on to your children, so your children will have the mutation or whatever it is. Many of them produced by cosmic rays. You not such a problem anymore, because a lot of your hard drives are electronic. But you remember you used to have the hard drive that spun? You remember once in a while your computer would lock up? And you would say, what is going on with this thing? You have to turn it off and turn it back on? Cosmic ray comes and hits off a piece of the magnetic particle. And then your little reader goes, doesn't know what to do, and it shuts down. Caused by cosmic rays. Not so much a problem now, because all our hard drives are solid state. But back in the 90s and early year of the century, they were quite a problem. Unbelievably, the Earth right now is in a supernova shell. Did you hear that? The Earth right now is in a supernova shell. That means that sometime in the past, near to us, a supernova has exploded. And it has exploded and gone past the Earth, and we are in the shell of it. Here's an example of what they think would have happened. There's the moon right there. Here's a star nearby us. And there's the expanding SNR, or the shell, carrying all those cosmic rays. As the cosmic rays arrive, it's like a wave on the beach. And in a few weeks, the whole Earth gets irradiated with cosmic rays. We're just looking at one concept here, brother. Recently, scientists studying the background radiation and the radiation from more deadly, heavier particles have come to some very interesting conclusions. These scientists have determined that the Earth is immersed in a supernova remnant shell of a very close supernova. Next question is, where's the star? The specific star's location, which produced the SNR, has not yet been determined. The reason is the supernova remains hidden is that the SNR shell, which is it produced, has filled most of the stellar sky and is therefore indistinguishable from the background of stellar radiation. In other words, we're so much in this shell, and these particles are flying around us so much that we can't determine from where they came. It's sort of like you can't see the forest for the trees. You ever been in a grove of pine trees? And you don't know how far the forest is? Is it another 100 feet or is it another 100 miles? Oh, it's only when you get up on an airplane and look down, you go, oh yeah, I was in a little, 100 square yards of forest. That's what we're like right now. We're in a supernova remnant shell. We don't even know it, and it's only been recently discovered. What does that mean about when it passed us? And what would happen when it passed us? Interesting concepts to think about. Genetics and lifespan decline. Mutations in the longevity genes. You remember I told you that I believe that Noah and all the people before the patriarch, Adam and Eve, had a longevity gene? Adam and Eve were programmed to live longer than 1,000 years. Because God said, you ate of the fruit, you're not going to live as long as you want. You're only going to live 1,000 years or less a day. So they had the potential to live longer. So Adam and Eve had the longevity gene, and they passed it down to their children, and the environment changed. Increasing levels of ionizing radiation from the supernova remnant. Radiation hormesis before and after the flood. That was when I talked about the good radiation and the amounts versus the bad later on. Although, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be a little long-winded. You are going to get out of here early. We did not have a sermonette. The atmosphere and lifespan decline. Atmospheric changes. What could have happened to the atmosphere? Ozone shield. Ozone up in the upper atmosphere is very, very beneficial. Cosmic rays come from outer space. They hit the ozone, which is 3 oxygen atoms, a big atom. So they hit this, and they break up the ozone, the 3 oxygen atoms, plus the cosmic ray splits into little pieces. So instead of having this particle that's got 28 protons and neutrons, you got 20 of them that only have 2. And so they come down to the Earth at a slower rate, which doesn't harm us as much. Atmospheric pressure reduced. And oxygen concentration reduced. When you're diabetic and they're going to amputate your toes or your foot, it's because you don't have enough oxygen in there. So what some of the doctors have done is they have a hyperbaric chamber. And they put your foot in this chamber and they seal around it and they pump up the oxygen level in there and they pump up the pressure. And it forces oxygen through your skin into your toes and all of that. And you get a treatment every month and you don't have to lose your toes and your feet anymore. People that have frostbite. It's a treatment for frostbite. Some people say that the pressure before in the atmosphere and the oxygen concentration was greater in the time before the flood. The dinosaurs, flying dinosaurs, they have theories about, because they're so big, the dinosaurs, and they can't fly. And they were trying to figure out, how could they fly, in the air we have today? So maybe they got on the edge of cliffs and they dove off, and that's how they kind of, took off. So therefore, they have to have lived around cliffs. They have all kinds of theories. No, what happened when they were alive, the pressure of the air was greater, so the air was thicker. And so when they pushed on their wings, it lifted them up. So we had greater air pressure. Some people think that the pressure for the air and the oxygen concentration is reduced now. That's why people don't live as long. Changes to the Earth's magnetosphere. Here is the Earth right here. Is the sun. It's to scale the size, but not the distance. The Earth has its own magnetic field right here. It gets moved back this way because the sun has its own magnetic field and magnetic wind, and the wind is pushing against the magnetosphere of the Earth. So the Earth has a magnetosphere. Your cosmic rays don't have any electrons, so they're positively charged. They're ionized. And so this magnetosphere, do magnetism, does it repel and attract? Depending on what charge it is, here come the incoming cosmic rays. They hit this, it's charged, and they fly off to the side. So an increase in the magnetosphere of the Earth would have affected the cosmic rays coming to the Earth. The increase of the sun's magnetosphere, right over here, it's huge. It goes all the way out to almost Jupiter. Would have, the strength of it would have affected cosmic rays entering into the Earth. Changes to the Earth's magnetic field would affect the amount of cosmic rays and supernova remnant particles reaching the Earth. More particles reaching the Earth, we have more mutations, more changes to the genetic material of the humans. I already told you that we're inside of a shell of one of them. Space travel and longevity. You think I may be being a little melodramatic. Let me tell you something, brethren. We live on a spaceship. This spaceship is miraculous, the way it's been designed. It's designed to support our life and let us live for as many years as we have. What would happen if I wanted to shorten everybody's lifespan in here? A couple of things I could do is decrease the magnetic field. Maybe have a couple of supernovas explode a couple hundred light years away. And pretty soon I have lots of cosmic rays coming through here. Increase in mutations, people die sooner. What would happen if I did the opposite? You figure that out. Now let's look at space travel. They're thinking about sending a man and a woman, men and women, to Mars. The problem is they don't know how to deal with the cosmic rays. And for some, they think it would be a one-way trip because you're going to be a year in travel. You're going to be a year exploring Mars. And then you're going to be a year returning. So it'll be a couple of years or 3 years for the trip. You're not on the Earth anymore. You're in a spaceship in deep space. What happens when people travel in space? This is some of the articles that I've got referenced in my Works Cited. The type of tumors that cosmic ray ions make are more aggressive than what we get from other radiation. How do they know that? People that have come back from the space station have developed these tumors. You see this picture of this man, and he's been in space for 185 days. What they don't tell you is his chances for cancer and these type of things has increased a lot. An astronaut on a two-year mission to Mars will receive 1,000 times the amount of normal radiation exposure. That's on a two-year trip. What if it's a three-year trip? What about going to Saturn? Six-year trip. That's one of the biggest problems is, can they physically survive and make it? Astronauts are exposed to galactic cosmic rays because they're outside of the Earth's magnetic field. The nuclei of atoms careening through space with incredible speed and energy. If these cosmic rays hit an important cellular structure like DNA, they can generate mutations. Out in space, it is estimated that it would take about 3 days for every single one of your trillions of body cells to be hit by a high energy proton. You remember I talked about a proton, just one? Every day, every 3 days, your body would be getting hit by one of them. On Earth, it's about every 6 or 7 months. High energy, over the course of a year, each of your cells would likely have encountered at least one heavy and damaging iron nuclei. So instead of it being hit by a proton, it's going to be hit by something that got 110 of these weights. Which you can imagine, one and 110, which one's going to do the most damage? And these large galactic rays are coming in from outer space, and they are shielded by the Earth's magnetic field. When you're between Earth and Mars in a spaceship, they're not shielded. Now, they could shield them, but it would require lots and lots of shielding material. And all the shielding material has to be launched into outer space. And they can't get it all up there. It would be thousands of pounds of stuff. So they're looking at how can we protect the astronauts from getting all of these things that are going to shorten their lifespan. And here we are, brethren, on a spaceship called Earth. It's got all these systems that protect us, that keep us alive for 90 or 100 years. My contention is that in the past, they were more efficient, and they kept people alive for 800 to 900 years. Before the flood, this is what I believe happened before the flood. Lower levels of primary cosmic rays before the flood. We were not in that supernova remnant shell like we are now. I believe that during the flood, this shell, or right before the flood, this shell of particles came and hit the Earth. Higher shielding level of the magnetosphere of the Earth. The Earth's magnetic field was stronger. It's getting weaker as we speak. Higher magnetic activity of the sun, increasing the interplanetary magnetic field. In other words, the sun's magnetic field and shielding the Earth from incoming primary cosmic rays. The primary cosmic rays are the big ones. So you're actually being shielded by two things. The Earth's magnetic field and the sun's magnetic field that's enveloping the Earth all the way to Jupiter. Possible background radiation, which would be low-dose radiation, which would immunize and strengthen the body from further radioactive assaults. So in the past, we had just the right kind of radiation to give us that immunity to radiation that was coming later. More ozone, oxygen, and higher atmospheric pressure. The patriarchs had a longevity gene. They were just given, when they were made, they were given this gene that made them live longer. My father is alive. He's 80-something years old. My mom is still alive. So the chances of me living to be 80 are very good from a genetic point of view. All of us know people that everyone in their family dies at 60 or 50. That's genetically controlled. They can exercise, they can diet, they can do stuff, but the genetics is overriding all of that. After the flood, what happened after the flood? The arrival of a supernova remnant shell. And this is just one of the aspects, brethren. I tell you there was probably thousands of systems. This is just one. With increased levels of primary cosmic rays and other radiation. This may have been intense and short-lived and caused specific life-shortening mutations which were passed on to succeeding generations even after the stellar radiation fell to normal levels. So what happens is Noah and his wife are alive. There's a supernova remnant shell that passes while they're alive before they have children. Their body is irradiated and some of the sex cells mutate. The longevity gene is compromised. Their children. Now, how do we know that it was not Shem that got it, but that it was Noah and his wife that got it? Because if Shem would have gotten the irradiation, it wouldn't have bothered Ham and Japheth. And we would have one line of humans living a long time and the others not. We know that it had to be Noah and his wife or someone before them, because all of the children of Noah only lived to be so many years old. A lowering of the shielding effect of the magnetosphere. The Earth's magnetic field may have varied. Another little thing that I need to tell you about, going back to the space scenario. You have men flying to space, women flying to space. They're on the way to Mars. They have some protection in the way that the ship is designed. They're still getting irradiated a lot, but not so much. And they can probably make it and come back and live another 20, 30 years. You know, every once in a while you get this message on your cell phone that says, oh, sun has put out a solar flare. Expect trouble for the next 5 hours with your phone. And we go, oh, how about that? If you were in the spaceship, you know what would be happening to you? You'd be dead. Solar flare comes and hits you, the contents of it, you're not alive anymore. So not only do they have to look at cosmic rays, but they have to look at solar flares. So they're thinking, we're going to launch this ship when the solar flare activity is low. What happens if the sun doesn't cooperate? A couple of solar flares come out when they're in the middle of the space journey. We're not going to be able to read about them anymore. So we live in a spaceship, brethren, that's designed to allow us to live as long as we do. Variations in the output of the sun, especially the sun's magnetic field, which would allow more cosmic rays to reach the Earth. So not only do we weaken the magnetic field around the Earth, we weaken the magnetic field around the sun. Radiation would be brought to the surface of the Earth due to the earthquakes and volcanoes produced by the flood. Have you ever read in the book where it says the great fountains of the deep were broken open? Volcanoes put all their magma onto the surface of the Earth. We studied some of this when we looked at the catastrophes of the Earth, how there's great lava beds all over. There's radioactive elements inside of the Earth. Those are brought to the surface of the Earth after the flood. Those are going to affect how long people live. Because now instead of being irradiated at this amount, we're being irradiated at this amount because of all of the radiation that's brought to the surface of the Earth. So the radiation may have been brought to the surface of the Earth after the flood. A change in the type and strength of the terrestrial background radiation and the human body's reaction to this new form and strength of background radiation. The post-flood background radiation may have been harmful. In other words, if we give you a little bit of a toxin, it produces an immunity. If we give a little bit more of it, but immunity is bigger. If we give you a little bit more of it, pretty soon we're crossing the threshold where it's helping you and it's now hindering you. You give you enough of this, it will kill you. So the radiation may have done the same thing. After the flood continued, we had a lowering of the atmospheric pressure, a lowering of the atmospheric oxygen levels, genetic changes to the hormonal makeup. Your hormones and the way they work are genetically engineered. Well, what happened not only to the longevity gene, but to the rest of your body? Changes in the ozone balance and the amount in the atmosphere. The ozone in the upper atmosphere is great. The ozone, as it comes to the bottom of the surface of the Earth, is not good. It's toxic. You go outside and you smell the air after an electrical storm. You say, it smells clean. You're smelling ozone. Ozone is produced by electricity. It's actually not good for you. But here's my point. Before the flood, the Earth was tropical. There was no wind systems because there was no solar. There was no polar and Antarctic ice caps. The winds, what happens is you have cold and cold at the ice caps, and you have warm in the middle, and the air is trying to equalize this, so you get the trade winds. They come in belts like this. You've seen them in your geography class. And that's caused by the ice caps. Well, this wind that's caused by the ice caps is mixing up the ozone in the upper atmosphere and bringing it down to the lower atmosphere. So before the flood, when there was no wind systems, the ozone would be back up at the top of the air where it should have been. Now we're breathing a lot of ozone that we shouldn't have been breathing, or that our ancestors weren't breathing in the time of before the flood. Changes in the composition of nutrients in the foods and plants. You change up the nutrients and the soil, and you're eating it. So here we have a model of decreasing longevity. This is what could have possibly happened. Noah lived 950 years, his genetic potential, because he was not supposed to live longer than 1,000 years. Shem lives less than all the pre-flood patriarchs, but longer than all the post-flood patriarchs. So Shem had a little bit of this longevity gene, probably mutated, but the environment was causing havoc with him, because now he was living in a different world. Since Shem was born before the flood, he should have lived almost to 1,000 years, but he didn't. Why? The other shortening was caused by the environment. Shem carried a mutation for reduced lifespan. He inherited it from his parents. How do we know he inherited it from his parents? Because Shem, Ham, and Japheth all had it, which means they got it from their parents. Post-lifespans were grouped in generations. Remember I showed you the generations? This indicates that along with the gene for shortened lifespan, something environmental was also affecting their lifespan. We had that decay curve. Longevity of early man is important because the truthfulness of Genesis is important. What I want you to get today, one of the things I want you to understand is that even though we don't know the mechanics of exactly how it worked, you're not being illogical and idiotic to believe that the earth could be designed to support life for 900 years. You just change the systems around and it'll do it. You can easily change the systems to reduce life. If you were smart enough, you could change the systems to increase life. On the other hand, we're not God. We don't know how he did it. But you don't have to, you know, be thinking that you're ignorant because you believe that, you know, Noah lived to be 950 years old. If Genesis is not true, because men didn't live as long as they say they did, we cannot trust the rest of the scriptures. Longevity has implications for the fossil record of early man and the pre-flood biosphere. So longevity, some of the fossils show evidence of living for a long time. What happens to a wolf that lives to be 250 years old? You put an adjective in front of them, calling him dire. What happens to a bear? They're 8 or 9 feet tall now. What happens to a bear that lives to be 450 years old? You call him cave bear because he's now huge. So there were some animals that lived for a long time. And this, what I'm getting at is, what I want to say in more words than not, is men were not the only organisms to live a long time. We tend to think that only men live to be 900 years old. Well, what happened to some of the turtles that lived to be 900 years old? They would get huge. In the fossil record, you have turtles that are 12 feet across. How'd they get that big? Reptiles get bigger as they get older. Longevity is a key factor in Eden, and therefore in the millennium. Eden, the Garden of Eden, one of the components of Eden, one of them was that the animals were very docile and kind, right? Another one was that God walked with people. All of these are concepts of Eden. Another one was that people that lived in Eden were going to live for a long, long time. It was built into them. So if the millennium and Eden, the paradise of Eden and the millennium, are analogous of each other,